Project, welcome back to the After Show. So, we actually just finished an interview with a really good guest. So, Dominic D'Agostino, I'm not sure exactly how you pronounce it, but I've known about Dom for a while. He was probably most popularized with his interviews with Joe Rogan, where he talked a lot about the ketogenic diet.
And I think he kind of got Joe on it in some ways, or like gave him off on the protocols.
Yeah, I'd say so. Yeah, definitely say so. And you know, Rhonda Patrick follows his work and stuff, so she always references him when she comes on the Joe Rogan podcast. So we had
which
we
actually was just this week.
Yep,
she just came on and they were talking about Dom again.
Yeah, and I want to talk about Rhonda in a sec, but also the podcast. Man, there's some really good takeaways for you guys in that podcast. So one of the things that we talked about
in the one we just did,
and it'll be out in this episode. And this look, it was very dense, so like you're gonna need a notepad and stuff. We talked about a lot of stuff, covered a lot of ground very succinctly. But one of the things that one of the takeaways that I thought was worth just quickly punching in here at the start of the show was Dom's like a massive component for like blood glucose monitoring continuously, and one of the benefits he's seen, which can drop the spikes in your glucose throughout the day, your blood glucose, is to have by up to 50%, 30 to 50%, is to literally just go for a walk after your meals, which is like a pretty easy thing to do and something that you rarely do. And he said he reckons one of the worst things you can do for your longevity is to have a big meal and then just sit at a desk, which is like a pretty easy fix. So I'm gonna go,
which is pretty much everybody in modern life.
Everyone, right? So I'm gonna do some walks. He reckons just as
but not just longevity,
minutes.
Also on the day, like instant,
how you feel,
short term,
yeah.
How you feel,
yeah. And so like he said, even just 5 minutes is good. It can just be like a casual brisk walk. So
and I think everyone's found that. Surely you've had a night where you've like gone out for like massive meal, and at the end of you're like, oh, I need to have a walk.
Yeah, all the time.
I need to walk this off.
Yeah. You do it, I reckon, a lot on holidays because, like, you don't have anywhere to be necessarily, and you're like, "All right, cool, we'll walk down the beach,
yeah,
or like go for a walk afterwards, just see the town." But one of the other things that seemed pretty interesting, pretty intriguing, is the ketone supplements, exogenous ketones, which has been around for a while. I need to find a good brand. He sent us a list of some good brands.
I think he said that. He said it, or is that on a different show? 80% of the ones he sees out there are pretty
bad.
No,
he said that, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're gonna explore some different options there and test them and see what they're like. So I'd definitely be trying those out. And I'll also be trying to get my hands on a glucose monitor as well. And then just experiment with it for like 2 or 3 weeks. Just try all the foods that I have and see how it affects my blood sugar. I know you've done one of those before. But the options that he gave us, the ones that stay on the skin, seem pretty
way
exciting.
Better. Yeah,
connect to an app and everything.
Because pretty much you just want to eat meals, like different meals with carbohydrates, and then you just see how they affect you differently. And it's obviously, I think some people find like some meals, same amount of carbohydrates affect them very differently to other meals. But like often people know that like
different types of carbohydrates,
different types of carbs, like bananas and whatever, totally different to like rice, it's totally different to sweet potatoes. And it's amazing because man, he has like that patch on his arm. I assume he puts it on once, doesn't touch anything, and then he just gets all the data he needs for the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Maybe just inputs the meals on his phone.
Yeah.
Kind of, it's basically like a Whoop.
Yeah. It's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So we're going to try and figure that out, get our hands on one of those.
Whoop just needs to make that like an accessory.
Well, he said it connects to the Whoop.
He
was saying something about it connecting to the Whoop. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but he was mentioning that. Anyway, so I want to talk about Rhonda Patrick. So she goes on, I don't know if you've ever noticed some of the stuff she talks about, but and I've heard some of her critics before, especially when she delves into the realm of diet and exercise. She gets a lot of critical feedback, which I'm sure she's open to. But I don't know if you've ever noticed, I think the problem with when guests come on Joe Rogan, you just take their word as gospel. And some people were sending me the episode going, oh, what about this? Should I do this? She said this. And a lot of the stuff that she says, so I went through and listened to some of it because these clients were asking about it. She takes inconclusive animal research studies and applies it instantly to herself as if it's like gospel, which I think is, look, it's fine for self-experimentation. And she's pretty clear that there's like no strong human data, but the way it comes across is like, oh, they showed this in like my studies and this, and so I think this, and now I'm doing that. And if you're not scientifically minded, then you'll take that as gospel. You'll take that as like, oh, I should do this. Like, that's what Rhonda Patrick said. And I just want to make a bit of a PSA here. Just be very fucking careful with what Rhonda Patrick says in terms of like her nutritional recommendations and stuff around like micronutrients and stuff, because I've heard other scientists be very critical of her and debunk a lot of her stuff. I think she would openly admit fault to it, but it's just how she presents it and comes across is she just will take like really far-fetched evidence, a lot of stuff from animal studies, and just like present it in a way that it seems like you should just do it as a normal dietary behavior. So just be really careful with some of the stuff that she says. I don't think it's that great in terms of personal recommendations. I think when she cites some of the research and some of the stuff, it's good and it's revealing stuff, but I don't think she's very spot on at all with a lot of her dietary recommendations. I'd be very careful with some of that stuff in terms of taking it as gospel.
I haven't heard the whole show. Was there anything in particular in the show?
Not really. She's kind of playing around with keto, like at the first half of the show. She's playing around with like fasting and ketosis because she's like trying to get into like a really focused state, which seems to be like a running theme with a lot of scientists. It's like they're trying to find the optimal diet for like focus and work, which you can imagine, right? Their work is highly cognitive. Yeah, outside of that, I didn't get deep enough to find out. Sometimes she talks over your head a little bit. She just like goes way down into the weeds. And so you got to be like really paying attention. So if you're not like fully into it at the time, you like get lost about what train of thought she's
on. And it's true because often she's like, this is really exciting research and this, I'm trying it. And then a year later, it's like, nah, it didn't turn out.
Yeah.
So you got to be aware. That's kind of how she's operating.
And you got to understand, she's an extreme personality. Mm. Like, she's not someone that does things in halves. She's like, cool, I found this little potential bit of research.
Yeah.
Ate like 400 packets of gum. And she's like, oh, yeah. So now I'm eating like 50 packets of sardines a day or some crazy shit. Or like loads of fish. And Rogan's like, oh, I did that once. Yeah, it turned out like, fuck me up. She's like, oh, God. So she's like, she's extremist in the truest scientific way. Like, hey, there could be something here. Let me fucking go balls to the wall with it and experiment and find out, which is great. Like, that's what you want scientists to do. It's kind of like push the boundaries there and find those things out. But like, don't, I wouldn't just start copying Rhonda Patrick's like dietary habits because she's experimenting with it. And I think that's what tends to happen a little bit with these shows. So just like be very careful with that sort of stuff. She's very extreme in how she tries her protocols. But that's why you have guinea pigs out there.
Yeah.
People are like that. They test that stuff. That's why a lot of those PhDs and scientists, when they find something on a carnivore diet or whatever, they're like, cool, I'm going to go carnivore and test it. Like, they like testing that stuff, which is good. But it's not, it's none of that stuff when it relates to diet, nutrition, exercise should discredit any of the other stuff, which is, I think, a massive problem that people have is someone is correct in one field and then they get something, they go slightly out of their lane, they kind of warn that they're not quite in their lane. They maybe go, look, I'm an expert. Here's my opinion on this field, but I'm an expert in this thing. This is theoretically what could happen. People go, well, that was actually wrong. And they discredit everything they say, which is really bad to do, right? Which is like the problem with what the public doesn't understand about science, is particularly as it's related to COVID this year, is that scientists will make mistakes, right? The way that the CDC or whoever it was, or who, you know, made the mistakes of bringing out masks. They looked at some research and some evidence. They thought masks weren't good. They put out the recommendation not to wear masks. Then they retracted it and they said, fuck, we were wrong. That is how science works. You know, scientists say things and
I thought it was because they were worried we were going to run out of masks.
No.
I heard a thing and it was like, they were worried that if they recommended it for everyone, they're like, we're going to run out of masks. Because we didn't make that many masks then. And then they're like, the people that really need it won't have it.
No, because they
we're not going to recommend
it. There was that element to it, but they did cite that masks really weren't effective against the like transmission of thinner. And they cited some research and stuff.
Now I can't leave my home without it.
Then they retracted it. Just because they're like, hey, maybe, look, who knows maybe why they said it in the first place. Maybe it was because of a mask shortage that might have
played. And you got to think, fair enough to make a mistake. They were probably pretty busy at the time.
Yeah, but in principle, like, science is the process of making mistakes and learning from them and reiterating and not take anything as gospel. There's actually a really good page right now. He's like a bodybuilding YouTuber. His name's Jeff Nippard. People probably heard, makes really good videos on like bodybuilding science, but he's actually going like pretty hard with like the vaccine stuff at the moment.
Oh yeah,
and he's like,
I watched his video to help us prepare for the 10,000 calorie challenge.
Oh, really?
He's done it. Here's how you want to prepare for like the 10,000 guys.
Nice. He would have had a very methodical
approach. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. You know what? Talking about eating a meal and going for a walk, that's what we did on the 10,000 calorie challenge.
That was our full strategy. Yeah. I think we took 40,000 steps that day.
Yeah.
Like, we walked like across Sydney.
And the other strategy before that was to work out. And that wasn't a good
challenge. No, it didn't work at all. Yeah, the first 10,000 calorie challenge, we did like air bike. We did weights.
Doesn't work.
We trained all day and we were nearly sick.
Yeah.
It was so awful. And then, yeah, the next time we just walked.
Because when you walk, you exercise and digest the food. Mm. Whereas when you train, the intensity is too high. So you stop digestion and you shift the blood into muscle and stuff. Anyway, what was I talking about? Oh, yeah, Jeff. Anyway, Jeff, he's actually putting out... So he started putting out some stuff. He put out a good post about the vaccines. I shared it. And like, I don't think, look, where you stand and what your opinion is on this, I don't really care, to be honest. I just want people to go look at this stuff and make up their own mind. And that's his approach and that's his stance on it. He felt like, because people were criticizing him, right? I think this is about the conversation about stepping out of your lane. People were criticizing him saying, Jeff, you know, you're a health and fitness and exercise guy. You know, we come to you for building muscle, losing fat. Why are you posting content about vaccines? And he's like, look, first of all, it's just a massive topic of interest to me as a scientist. And he's like, most of my university and post-university studies have been on like biology and genetics and some other stuff unrelated to this. He's like, the sports science thing came in like very late into my studies. So he's like, I've been in this sort of research like a lot more. And he was also just like, you know, I want to share this stuff. A lot of the stuff he shares is just reposting of other scientific people stuff, like epidemiologists and stuff, posting stuff in there. But all I would encourage you is to just go look at it yourself. If you want some good content on vaccine stuff, I think it's quite good because there's a lot of scientists out there taking, the side and all the arguments that are anti-vaccine and they are posting their response to it. So regardless of what side of the fence you sit on, I think it's good to have someone come in and talk about, okay, here's everything you said, because that's what you want, right? You want the discussion of a topic. You don't want just people shutting people down. Like I hate that. That's censorship. You don't want censorship under any circumstances. Obviously that's fuels a lot of the, I guess, the taking sides in these conversations right now, is that there is some censorship stuff going on, which is never good. But yeah, if you want to read and look over the discussion, that's a good page to start. I think his name is JEFF and then NIPPARD. He's posting and reposting some stuff because I can't remember the names of the people he's reposting, but they're worth checking out if anyone's interested. Anyway, didn't expect to be talking about that. Just a quick request, actually. If anyone out there in the audience has any involvement personally or commercially with the watch market, can you please reach out to me? I have a request to put in, so thought I'd ask the audience. I've expended my local network, so now I'm like to reach out to a
digital network. What are you looking for? Someone that watches?
Nah, just anyone who's like, I'm trying to get got a special request, and so if anyone is involved in watches in general, just let me know, or know someone that can put me in contact with, just let me know. That would be very helpful. Anyway, we are sitting in the studio now. We don't actually have the cameras switched on, but we have picked up three new cameras, two of the Panasonic something something 4K, but they're like they're just video cameras, so they continuously film. We are waiting for a switchboard to arrive, which allows us to switch between those cameras live. So we will have the video version of this podcast up on YouTube. And we've also got for the camera nerds out there, the Sony A7 III. And the lens is a 24 to 105 millimeter f4. I think that's how you say it. And so we'll be putting out a lot more content for the YouTube channel. So stay tuned in the future. I know we announced it a while ago. We will be launching a series called Behind the Project, which is sort of a behind-the-scenes look at building Locker Room, filming the podcast, kind of the day-to-day stuff that Raf and the team and myself get up to. And we're posting that on the YouTube channel and then also posting, you know, 10 to 15-minute clips of some of the best segments of the podcast as well throughout the week. Maybe we'll do the whole video version of the podcast. Because we put out so many podcasts, maybe, you know, it's a lot of content to get through. I don't know. Let us know. Would you watch a whole hour and 40-minute podcast or a whole 50-minute after show or whatever? Is it worth putting up there? The decision lies in your hands. Vote now.
Can you watch them on Spotify yet? Have they extended that out?
Doesn't seem like it.
Yeah.
Doesn't seem like it. I think they have perfected it with Joe. I think
it's great now.
Yeah.
It's massively improved.
I think it's still limited to him. I've checked some other major shows that don't have it. Maybe they just haven't uploaded it. I don't know. But at this stage, it only seems like they've let Joe do it. I don't know if Spotify will be able to get
censorship. Everyone except Joe.
I don't know if they'll be able to get him to have, like, I don't know if they'll be able to get more people to use Spotify as a video platform.
Yeah,
that's a big, that's a big shift.
It's hard, but it is a great experience being able to, like, just jump on and then you just instantly where you are in the show with a video.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's a cool experience. Yeah. But personally, I actually do miss the ads at the start of the show.
You miss the ads?
Miss the ads.
Really?
Yeah, that's the whole process of it.
Why do you miss the ads?
Because Joe's hilarious reading out the ads. And there's, like, funny products. Like, I didn't hate the products. I don't know. I'm just not, like, that against ads. Like, if it's, like, some ad about, I don't know, like, a phone company I'm just not interested in.
Yeah.
But, like, good ads, I like them.
Yeah. To be fair, like, I have bought most of the products from Joe.
Yeah. Like, it's probably saved me money.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like ads.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all downhill after the Fleshlight ad. Obviously, that was the best, but...
Yeah, that was the best, yeah. No, it's true. The best ads he ever did, bro, were obviously for his company on it.
Yeah, when they good ads.
When he brought out Alpha Brain and Shroom,
that was the best part of the show.
I was so sold on those ads. Such good products as well. But yeah, they had real trouble getting them to the Australian market. Anyway, so you bought yourself... Talking about gear, you bought yourself that knees over toes... What is it called? Is it monkey foot? Is that the thing?
No, it's not. You can't get them.
Get them in Australia.
No, you can't. Yeah, like I really
can't,
looked into
they
it.
Can't ship them here.
Nah, they just won't ship them here. Yeah, I guess. Yeah,
but you could do one of those things where you ship it to a US address and they ship it here, right?
I guess so. Yeah, I just went on, messaged them. We don't ship to Australia.
Yeah,
unfortunately. I did want to get that, but this one I bought, and I bought this Shinraise. I think it's called the Tib Bar. I bought it because I think I've talked about it once here before, but I had like one of my first experiments in like health and fitness, fixing an injury. Was when I was 18, I'd had 3 years of shin splints, couldn't get rid of them, maybe 19. But it was like very annoying. It was like, even in my last year of high school, I would get it like walking between classes and stuff.
For those who haven't had shin splints, describe the feeling.
There's lots of different types. So I had the one where it's like on the inside of your shin.
Okay.
Like right up against the bone. You can get them like posterior. So I guess mine was anterior and medial.
Yeah.
And I got it obviously from running and playing rugby. But then it would get so bad, you'd basically just like, it's like on its way to a stress fracture.
Okay. So it is as it sounds, it's like microfractions along the bone.
That's exactly what's happening. So yeah. So basically the muscle underneath your, in the middle of your foot, like goes all the way up and attaches along the shin bone. And that keeps getting pulled step after step, mostly from overpronating. So you overpronate at the bottom and then it starts pulling on the shin. And
so like, rolling to the outside of your foot too much.
Rolling to the inside of your foot.
Inside of your foot. Sorry,
yeah. And then, so there's all these tiny tears down the shin. So it like, sounds painful, is pretty painful.
So it comes from a weak arch.
Yeah. Poor mechanics, weak arch, weak shin, weak calves,
the
tight
foot dropping
calves.
In constantly. Yeah.
Anyone that's had them knows absolutely sucks. And I tried absolutely everything. So I tried, $600 orthotics, every different type of shoe you can get, like the icing, the calf raise, the calf stretching. I tried everything. And then the one thing that fixed it was I started doing shin raises every single night, and I had like a bag, and I'd put like 1 kilo in the bag, and over like 4 months I built it up to like 7-8 kilos.
Like a plastic bag or something?
No, like a Kathmandu bag, you know, like a little hook that you put it on to like hang a bag.
Yeah.
So I'd put my toe into that, and then I would sit on the top of a staircase from upstairs where we used to do the podcast.
Yep.
And I would do shin raises. One night, unfortunately, I was going to failure and I dropped off my foot.
How much weight was in it?
It's like 8 kilos. Oh, it put a hole in the floor. Dude, it fell like 10 meters. And that was
lucky.
So
there was no one down there underneath. Hey, Raph, I just got you some milk.
I think it would have killed somebody. So anyway, I'd kind of forgotten about it. I've had it come back before. Once I was doing CrossFit in the open, like I was on painkillers because I'd got shin splints back
from
again.
Double unders,
yeah, from double unders. Yeah. So it's something I think lots of people deal with it for a long time because your mechanics don't change that much. You know, you always struggle with it. So I bought the shin bar to try and improve this because it's basically a shin strengthening device because it's a really hard muscle to strengthen. And what's cool about it is that it's the first device I've ever seen where you can like incrementally load it, which is what I was doing with the bag. Unlike a kettlebell, where you like have 1 foot on a kettlebell, 6 kilos, you can like never jump to 8 or 12. It's like just a big jump.
Yeah.
It's when you can just like load plates onto it and you can do 2 feet at a time, which I'd never done before. It's basically just made with piping. I would say that I think I paid $85 for this bar. You can order it in America and Australia.
What's it called?
Tib bar, so T-I-B.
Connor, can you bring up a photo of this?
Literally, there's a proper one in America, and then there's a guy in Australia who's just making them and clearly making an insane profit margin because he's putting this thing together with piping, I can tell. Can you bring it up here? Okay. Yeah, that's the one I bought, and then there's like actually nicer ones in the States that people will buy.
Wait, is that it? The homegym.com.au? Is that?
Yeah, this is the one I bought.
Oh, yeah, cool.
No, that's a that's a nicer one.
Oh, okay.
That's the one in the States. Oh, that's okay. The one the States wanted to get. Wouldn't ship it here, so
but
I bought...
But that's .com.au. That's an Australian website.
Oh, no, sorry. No, that is the one I got. I just got the thinner one. So, see, that's Olympic plates?
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. That one's, like, a bit more beastie. I got the thinner one to put on, like, non-Olympic size plates.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that is the one I've got. Can you see, like, the smaller one there?
Is that it there?
No, go down. That's the one I've got. That one without the adapter sleeve. So, got I've it. Got the... Yeah, the discontinued model, I guess, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that's what I need. No, yeah, mine's got cushions. Yeah, I've got the one without the Olympic one.
Okay. So, can you use 1 foot at a time or has to
no,
be two?
No, it has to be two.
Ah, okay.
It has to be two. Which is actually a recommendation. So, if you have a side-to-side difference, it's probably not helpful. It's probably worse than just using a kettlebell because you're not fixing that.
Because it doesn't balance, right? It stays, it would slide off.
It would
right?
just fall to the side.
So, yeah. In theory, you could just use your other foot just to balance it and just lift with the other foot, right?
Sort of, but both feet have to move.
I know what you're saying, yeah. But you could bias one side.
You could. It'd be like doing a hamstring curl with 2 feet on it.
And just pulling
and
through
trying
your
to
right
pull through yeah. one. But, yeah, I mean, if you ever want to strengthen your shins, it's like, couldn't be better. Yeah, it couldn't be better.
Because
you can load it. I tried it on with one client.
Here you go. Here's the fix, right? Put it on 1 foot, loop a band through the other side to balance it. So then as you go down, you just pull on the band a little bit.
Just to keep that would work.
Just to keep the balance.
That would work. But I mean, you could also use a kettlebell. You could put 1 foot through a kettlebell.
Yeah, but you're saying incrementally.
Yeah, it's not. Work. And also, yeah, usually just you can't even do a kettlebell. Like, it's too heavy for most people.
Yeah.
Because you want to do really high weights. The best part about it is you can just, like, destroy yourself. So you can, like, go really, really hard to the point where you can barely walk on it. Band is, like, not as good because, like, you can go through the full range of motion better.
Yeah.
With a band, like, it's too hard at the top and, like, it's too easy at the bottom.
Yeah.
So it is significantly better than that. When they have, like, I think now that I see that one, there's a nice one. We could definitely get one for the gym. My one's, like, doesn't look good enough to have at the gym. But, man, it's really, really good. If that's a big weakness for clients, because you do get that, or you've suffered with shin splints yourself, I couldn't recommend it more highly.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, that's great.
I would recommend it for your marathon.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no.
I don't know if you get shin splints, but...
No, I don't. But one thing that I will definitely... or one thing that I definitely will maintain as I go into this marathon distance is... Now the program's changed a little bit and he's got more time at race pace, which is zone 3, I believe, or threshold pace is what he calls it, which is like the zone you'd be running
that's,
in on
I found
day.
That the hardest bit of the program. Like, that's like the hardest running, zone 3.
No, I think zone 4 is harder.
Yeah, but it's very short.
2 minutes.
Yeah, I guess. Yeah, but I found like... Cause
zone 3 is like
10 minutes. Like it's painful.
Yeah, but... No, I like Zone 3. I like Zone 3 because it's really letting me know, like, okay, can I run this pace for the duration of the marathon? Mm. Can I run this zone? That's why I like it, because when I'm in Zone 2, which is like kind of where you do the majority of your long training, which is like
probably 90% of the running.
Yeah, it's like, it's very slow. So, you're like kind of just purposely, you're not really pushing yourself. You're kind of just like getting it
done.
Just
getting through the time.
Yeah. And I like Zone 3 because it's just a bit out of that and you're pushing yourself just enough and I'm figuring out, okay, is this a realistic pace to run? Because when you run Zone 2, you can't really imagine running much faster because you purposely just get stuck at this pace and you're not really pushing yourself and you're like, fuck, I'm still kind of moving here, still kind of hard. I don't know if I could run much faster than this because my initial plan, I was like, I would love to run at a 5 minute pace for the marathon and now I'm thinking, oh, it's going to be more like 5:30. For the marathon, but some experiences that I've had recently with the Zone 3, which is the threshold pace, has been pretty good. But I was going to ask you, do you think that the pace that put all the excitement and adrenaline aside of actually the day you do it, let's just talk about the actual heart rate. In Zone 2, your heart rate sits pretty comfortably around 150, right? But then on the race day, I imagine because you're running faster than that, your heart rate's going to be up at like 170, 160 for the whole time, which I imagine taxes you way harder. But you're trying to run your hardest marathon in theory. Is that wrong though? Shouldn't you try and... Do you think more conservatively you should try and run the marathon at like 150 beats per minute?
Yeah, I think that's why people get better at them the more they do them.
Yeah.
It's because they're better at doing these types of races with starting with a lower heart rate. And when you're a newbie, you're like so excited. Nearly everybody goes too hard in the first half.
Yeah. Because I could imagine, okay, if I sit at 170 at the start, just trying to hold this pace, I'm going to die really hard towards the end, right? Yeah. Whereas if I sit at that 150 for longer, then hopefully by the end, as I start to push it up and it creeps up, because obviously the longer you do it, your heart rate's just going harder, it's working harder. Then you it starts low and it's slowly creeping up the whole race, but you're at that threshold pace, because I basically can't run at that threshold pace and keep it around 150 for longer than like 10 minutes.
That's like the efficiency everyone talks about. It's why people just get good at sports and just get good at, if you just run more often, you just get more efficient at it.
Yeah.
Really what's happening is your heart rate's getting lower and lower, you know, over time, doing the same run. Even if like your fitness is not really improving.
Yeah.
It's just the efficiency.
Yeah, economy, movement, familiarity.
Yeah, exactly. You become familiar.
Yeah.
Why people suck at CrossFit the first time they do it?
Yeah, it's like panic. Yeah, it's like panic. When I started...
3, 2, 1, 220.
Bro, it's like when I started that season of BAS, that social league of basketball, you know, feels like ages ago, a year and a half ago, the one thing I was noticing the most, and this is when I was pretty fit, I was like, I can barely play like 20 minutes of basketball without feeling like I've done a fucking air bike sprint, right? It's because... everything I do had tension. There was no point in the game I was relaxing because everything was unfamiliar. Everything was conscious effort. There was nothing that was automatic. But that's, I guess, where I'm trying to get to is like, because how you run at and how you run at that kind of slower pace versus how you're running at that threshold pace takes more conscious effort because you have to kind of speed up. So it'd be interesting where I land. But anyway, one update I have is on the weekend, I ran 20Ks and I did hydration for the first time. So I kept a Powerade in a tree with a Red Bull. And probably every 5 or 6 Ks, I'd go and I'd just have like one or two sips and I'd have a couple of mouthfuls of Red Bull. And I tell you what.
Red Bull with...
caffeine.
With sugar though?
Yeah.
With sugar. So the real stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I don't drink that non-sugar fucking no caffeine bullshit from any company.
I don't think there's a non-caffeine Red Bull, dude.
There is.
Non-caffeine Red Bull.
Yeah.
What does it do?
No, sorry, no sugar Red Bull.
Yeah, no sugar.
Yeah, sorry, no sugar Red Bull. Yeah. But yeah, I don't drink that shit. Like I go for the original formula. That's like their core product that made them all the money. Fuck that other shit. And anyway, I felt unbelievable. Like I felt way better.
Yeah.
Way better.
We talk about this, hey. It works so well.
It is crazy how much of a difference. You feel fresh. You get to that 20K mark and I'm like, I can keep going.
But now there's even a new benefit, which is once you've done that, now the next time you run, you have this 25 minutes beforehand where you're looking forward to it.
Yeah.
And you're like, dude, it's going to be sweet. Yeah. All good because I got it coming.
Yeah, yeah. But it helps me. It begs the question in the future, what pace am I going to run this marathon at? I actually was speaking to one of our... because you've done the program. Mm. There's only one really long run, right? Where you go over like 3 hours.
The last run.
He was saying, this client has run multiple.
You go as long. It depends how fast you're going to run the marathon. So, the slower you run the marathon, the longer that run is.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's all time-based,
it's about
right?
30. I think it's about 32 kilometers.
Okay. So, he was saying that I should actually get more. He said, the one mistake most people will make for their first marathon, the mistake he made, and then with the future marathons that he ran, the thing he would have changed is that he would have done more longer, so that 32 that you described, he would have done more of those leading into his first marathon. He goes, because you need to experience the length of time for longer. He goes, because you could like do a 3 hour run and be like, fuck, that was pretty good. He's like, but then if you did another 3 hour run, which in this program would be your second, would be your marathon.
That doesn't exist in this program. Yeah.
Yeah, it would be your marathon.
Yeah, it would be the race.
He's like, it could go really wrong, like just depending on the day. So he's like, you need like 3 or 4 goes at this long distance just to kind of feel it out. Be like, okay, that time was really good. Why was that good? This time was really bad. Why was that? Because he's like, for your second time, it's kind of a, it's a random approach to like if it's going to feel good or not. He's like, but getting a few feels at that longer distance, getting closer to it, he goes, will help the marathon performance a lot more. So, I don't know what you think about that, but...
yeah, I think it's pretty common with sports, which is like, if you looked at the physiology of it, the best thing is to not do another three-hour run. But in practice, often you can throw that out the window because it's just the fact that like you're going to learn a lot doing this multiple times.
Yeah.
And when you're a beginner, you've only done it once.
Yeah.
So, you've seen so few things go wrong, even from like blisters to like, your nutrition to your hydration. Like, you do one, it might be cool. And then you do the next one and it's really hot.
Yeah.
And you're now completely unprepared.
Yeah. I am thinking about change, not completely altering the program, but where he says like, it's like, for example, this weekend, it's a deload week. I'm only supposed to run for an hour. You know, I might do another one and build on last week a little bit more.
Yeah. It's just that I think, which I do think the program is right, which is that like your injury risk and everything goes dramatically. Yeah.
And as the volume increases.
Where I think most people's programs on this stuff go wrong.
Yeah.
Because they write their own. They're like, all right, so I'm going to run for whatever, 3.5 hours when I do the actual one, I better be doing like quite a few 3-hour runs. And yeah. It's like, nah.
But
that's how you just get injured.
I feel like I'm in tune enough to know when I'm overdoing it and I'm not overdoing it. Like, for example, Ev, she was like joining me for bits and pieces of the program, but not fully doing it. She's gotten injured.
Yeah.
You know, because like you haven't built the tolerance.
Yeah, she's not doing the program. 100%.
People are like, oh, I'll just join you for the long one. I'm like, you know, but I've been building up to this. Like, I've done a lot more running than you.
Well, I thought you could try, which is what I did for the weight vest one, which was, because I was, you remember, I like was kind of getting a little bit injured towards the end.
Yeah.
Was instead of doing like a 3.5 hour run, I did a 1 hour bike before. So I did a 1 hour bike and then another 2 hour run.
Oh, okay, right.
To like get used to the length of time.
Yeah, gotcha.
And I think that kind of worked because you would start the run with like really heavy legs and you sort of felt like you had been going for an hour.
Mm.
You were like, you'd been sweating for an hour. So you're like already dehydrated.
It's interesting.
And then you're just like, man, I can do 3 hours.
Yeah. That's
so
interesting.
I think that's a pretty good way to do it. And then just for me, it was less impact through my shins and calves and stuff.
Yeah.
And I even remember Andrew Papp was on the show when he did his run. I don't know if you remember, he did that crazy like
the one
through the Alps.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what he did because he had that Achilles injury right before. So he was doing like very minimal running, but like heaps of biking. And then he'd like go out and do a little run.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I think it's worth experimenting with something like that. Obviously, injury is the priority, right? Like injury prevention is the priority. But I'm excited to test a few different things. And I think I do want to go close to that. I at least want to, I think, run the amount of time at a slower pace that if I ran the marathon at the pace I wanted to, it would be the same amount of time.
Yep.
You know, so it's like, so let's call it like 3:45. Mm. I want to do a 3:45 run, a 3 hour 45 run. It might be slower. You might not get the full distance, but you get the time on your feet.
Yeah.
So it'd be interesting. See where I land. But I'm definitely enjoying it. I think anyone in lockdown is enjoying it.
How long have you got to go?
I have got, I would say I'm in week 9. So just over halfway the program.
Yeah. A bit more. You're like 7 weeks to go, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I'm pretty sure I'm going to run it around Centennial. We were mapping it out the other day and we're just trying to figure out the times and stuff.
Will you do the gravel or you do the grass?
No, I'm going to do the, I'll do the cement.
Yeah, cement.
Yeah, cement. Nah, the gravel is okay, but what I've noticed with the gravel, it just could be my shoes, is I get really bad plantar fascia pain in my left foot about like an hour in. I think however my left foot runs on that, it doesn't stabilize properly and I just get like a shooting pain in my left foot.
It's not ideal.
It does not happen on the cement, so I'll be sticking to the road. All right, well, before we jump into some listener questions today, guys, we're going to talk about some lockdown vaccine related stuff, but we've talked enough about that. We can leave that for another time. Before we jump into today's show, supporting the show today, guys, RecGen. Raph and I have been putting... I reckon I've had this crew neck on and the hoodie every single day.
Yeah, we've overdone it.
We've thrashed them to death. And you know what? They've held up pretty well.
Very well.
This, the rest fleece, it's held up extremely well. Usually this sort of stuff, I find it peels pretty bad or like the stitching comes undone or like the softness goes away. But I've probably done 3 or 4 washes on each garment and they've held its shape really well. You know, sometimes garments have a really nice shape when you buy them, but then you wash them a few times, use them a few times, and they look completely different. Whatever Luke's done with these fabrics and the combination and the cuts, it's really nice and it's held its shape really well and I'm enjoying wearing them a lot. So if you're into the rest fleece stuff on the RecGen website, definitely check that out. Guys, they are the leader in activewear in terms of for men, fashionable and also functional and affordable. This is it. RecGen. That's who you want to shop with. So recgen.com. Remember, they ship all over the world for our special deal. It's recgen.com/MMP and you're going to get 15% off any specific item. All right, cool. Let's jump into the first listener question.
Running it. Are other forms of creatine effective as creatine monohydrate? There are quite a few brands offering different forms of creatine, like creatine hydrochloric or crealkaline. They say that metabolize easier for the body. All I wanted to know is which of these would be better to possibly take long-term or if it is mostly just marketing fluff.
Yep, the latter. All the research has been done on creatine monohydrate, all the positive results, all those other forms
I've never
creatine.
Heard of the second one. Crealkaline? You heard of it?
No.
No.
But all the other studies and stuff, it's just marketing hype. It is just marketing hype, yeah.
Yeah, and I think at absolute best, it's probably nearly as good. Like, I've never heard of it being better.
There's no superior form to monohydrate.
Max Gorman Bat. Just have a question of kind of supplements you think I should include in my diet. I currently do boxing training for an hour, 4 to 5 nights a week, involving heavy sparring. The only strength training I do is bodyweight workouts like push-ups, pull-ups, and core work. I also do lots of running, swimming, so my training is heavy, cardio-based. Also, what good exercise would you recommend to strengthen shins and calves?
Well, actually, the first thing that stood out to me there was you mentioned heavy sparring. So, obviously, you're taking a lot of shots to the head. And this has obviously been a personal concern of mine with my brother and the thing that he does. So, one of the things that I've looked in and I've researched that can be good is icing your head afterwards. So, in terms of, I know it's not really a supplement, but if you have like a cold pack or something, it's worth spending some time to bring down that inflammation in your brain with ice. There's some good research on that. Is I would be applying 10 minutes of ice or really, really cold water to the top of your head for at least 10 minutes after sparring. That's probably going to be super helpful if you're sparring 5 times a week heavy. I'm seriously concerned about the head trauma that you're taking.
Man, someone needs to make a, maybe they already have, like, what was the brand with the story with Kobe? Hyper Ice.
Yeah.
So he made famous, like, the like thigh
head version.
Head version.
Yeah, that's probably a good idea. Yeah. There's good research on it. Yeah.
Is it, there actually is research
on it? No, they're doing research on it. Yeah, because a lot of
I would imagine, like, full ice to your head is maybe, like, not great on your skin.
Yeah, it hurts too much, maybe. Yeah. Yeah, like, cold water can be really good. But, yeah, there's, like, a lot of... Because, obviously, the CTE stuff is, like, really popular at the moment.
So many sports involve head injuries.
Heaps, right?
Every contact sport, basically.
I think the research was done either on the military or on soccer players because of...
Headers.
Yeah, different head trauma and stuff. But, yeah, there's some really good stuff on cold therapy on the skull after kind of impact for reducing inflammation. And that's one of the, I think... concussion prescriptions they give you anyway, as well as a dark room. But in terms of supplements for performance, because that's the question you asked, you're doing a lot of cardio heavy stuff. So first thing that comes to mind, which might give you a slight edge, is beta alanine, which is like an endurance supplement. So I would potentially take that every day. That's how it's most effective, is you take the recommended dose or just whatever the dose is on a daily basis. And it does increase, and there's good research to show, it does increase your lactate threshold. So, it increases your aerobic threshold. So, I'd be using something like that. Creatine, definitely for power and energy utilization would be in there. And outside of that, man, I think you're pretty good. I wouldn't say there's much else out there that has good evidence to show much of a difference in performance.
Yeah, well, what I was going to say was, I think, because you mostly do endurance, I imagine a boxing gym is like, it's hydration supplements.
Yeah.
Probably the best. Because like, they probably don't do a lot if you're just doing strength training or like an hour of CrossFit. But I imagine if he's doing like, yeah, like heaps of sweating, you just get more out of your sessions.
Yeah.
So that might be like, kind of like, I mean, True Protein, I guess, have the fuel and they have the electrolytes. So like both would be good. So something in the middle of sessions that have calories and something outside of sessions that doesn't have calories, just helps with your hydration. So I think that would really help more than like, yeah, I don't know, some other random supplement that most people sell you.
Yeah, that's a good point. I'd be looking at that. So remember, if you're a first-time customer, you get 20% off. So it's just MMP20 is what you can use for the True Protein.
Okay. Rhodes Creative Branding, what's your favorite calorie counting app?
We've used a few. Obviously, MyFitnessPal is the most popular one.
The ultimate app, Google Sheets.
yeah, people
love that. That's an option.
Yeah. MyFitnessPal is the most popular one. I don't like it personally, MyFitnessPal. There's like too many ads
on it. Have you ever tried Premium?
Yes, but I didn't have the app. Someone else did. They were showing me Premium. I think it is better, but I think just generally intuitively, MyFitnessPal isn't like, I feel like it's not that user friendly.
No, popular it is and how much money I assume Under Armour puts into it, I reckon it's not that good.
No.
The Premium is definitely better. I don't use it anymore, but I did use it. Just like gets rid of the ads, tells you to feel the breakdowns of your day better. But I still find it takes too long.
Yeah, yeah. And we've tried a few, the RP app.
I didn't use that.
Yeah, I didn't like it. It was very, very detailed and it was very... Man, it was too detailed. It's for the person that's like a professional... powerlifter or bodybuilder. You can tell the personality type that made this app is like, I need to know exactly when I eat, exactly the type of exercise when I trained.
That's not me.
Yeah, exactly like how many grams of this, you know, fat, and it was just too much. It was honestly way too much. I think if you're like a competitive bodybuilder, or like a competitive like powerlifter or weightlifter, I think it can be a worthwhile app. If you've, it's basically your life, right? It's for someone whose routine is based around their training and their food, which is professional bodybuilders, powerlifters, and weightlifters. But in terms of a gen pop, fuck man, that is a difficult app to input. Just to get it set up a day, it was like trying to get me to put in like my sleep and wake times, my exercise times, my types of exercise. Like it was just way too much information before we even got to tracking food. So yeah, if your life has any variability in it, constant variability, which I think most of us do, I would not be recommending that app. The app I did land on, which I quite enjoyed, I tried some stuff that weren't tracking apps. So Meal Builder app, so the Equilution one, I tried a little bit of that. That wasn't for me. It's mainly a coaching app anyway. And then there was the, what was it called? I can't remember, but it's based off your psychology. It's like habit building psychology based one. It's actually really popular. I can't remember it, but one of the girls at the gym who's a psychologist, she's used it for her eating. And she said it was really good.
Is it like you're feeling down, have ice cream?
Yeah, it kind of like helps you understand your patterns around food. It's like, how do you feel when, or like when you eat junk food, how do you feel? Or like, hey, when you're feeling sad, like, do you turn to food? And it's got all these different things. Or like,
probably pretty useful.
Yeah, it's actually pretty good. The reason she downloaded it is because she's a psychologist, and it was like the app was built by other psychologists that are based in the field of research, and it's like using scientifically evidence-based psychological, or not psychological, psychology, whatever you call it.
It's definitely a thing, because you think about, you know, when you're like, oh, I feel like going out and eating some type of food. It's not like your body's like, but we're definitely low in magnesium, like we need ice cream tonight. Like, it's just, you just have like a series of events in your day or in your week that make you crave going out for food.
She said it was really good. She said there was like some revealing stuff, and like, I guess the evidence-based protocols that they have in that app that are based in psychology, not in nutrition, she said were really good. And she learned some stuff about herself, but she stopped using it after a few weeks. She said it wasn't that sticky. That's cool. But something like that. But that's not a tracking app. But the best tracking app we found that we've used is Lane Norton's app, which is called
Carbon app.
Carbon is just like MyFitnessPal, but just more intuitive. Like, it's just a bit simple.
Does it import the data from MyFitnessPal?
Oh, you haven't used Carbon?
No.
No. I don't know.
Like, you know, the data's in, like, when you search a food, it finds the food. Like, is it its own database, or is it, you don't know if it's powered by somewhere else?
I don't know if it, I think they can just pull that database from anywhere. I don't think now, I think there's like global databases they can pull from.
Yeah.
But it's got everything in there. It's definitely got everything in there. And it's just a little bit more intuitive. It just cuts out a lot of the noise that's in the MyFitnessPal app, and it just makes a lot more sense the way it flows. It's like a lot more simple. Whereas sometimes just like trying to input a food onto MyFitnessPal, it's like, becomes really annoying. But the Carbon app is a lot better. It's a very simple, very easy to use app, but that's the one I would recommend.
Does it tell you how to diet as well, or it's just calories?
I think it's just tracking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I actually can't remember.
Andy Scammell, what's your best tips for dealing with injuries and not coming back too early?
That's a good question. Just trying to think of the most recent... Probably my most recent injury that I was dealing with were my knees with running. I completely solved that. Like, the knee pain is gone 100%, which is awesome. And I'm doing like the most running I've ever done. But the back and forth with it initially was, it's just doing too much too soon. Like, you got to let that pain come down. And then you got to build it back up slowly. I mean, I don't know how many experts have we spoken to on the show about injury. And that's like the thing they all say, right? There's like massive consensus on volume and just loading that tissue too much. So, I mean, you talked about your tibialis earlier and your shin splints. It was related to volume, right? That's where the pain came from. But the protocol out of it is different, obviously. But the initial protocol into it is just coming from too much volume.
Well, alongside doing shin raise, I was obviously not running as much.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you've reduced the cause of the issue, and now you need to strengthen the areas around it. And it's a pretty simple, pretty easy formula to remember. I don't think there's anything much after that. Probably the only caveat I'll add, and there's actually a client we're working with at the moment, just got off a shoulder surgery, a labrum tear, is don't be one of those people that's like, nah, fuck, I'm like smarter than the surgeon. I'm like not going to follow this protocol. And he says like, it'll be good in 13 weeks. I'll do it in 6.
Yeah.
Like, they're smart. These people know what they're doing. They You let him cut your shoulder
also,
open.
Also, you've actually gained so little time. Like, say you actually beat the surgeon, right? You get it done in 8 weeks instead of 13. It's like, wow, you gained 4 weeks potentially of training.
Yeah.
Across a lifetime.
Yeah.
And you've risked ruining the whole surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. But like, the reason they got that is because there are certain tissues and structures within the human body that have different healing times. And if you rush that, you expose that tissue to being torn again.
It's also probably a bit of an average. So, you could be below average.
Yeah.
You could be below the 13 weeks.
Yeah.
Some people are going to be for sure.
Yeah. And that's why they write a really conservative protocol and they let it, you know, they monitor it based off pain. And that's how you should do it. Or not just pain, but also just based off like, how's it feeling? How's the range of motion improving? Yeah. Is it reduced pain? Is the strength of it improving? And just don't rush it. I think everyone's just in a rush, right? I get it. If you're putting food on the table and you got to get back in the ring or you got to fucking get back on the field or on the court.
Which is almost nobody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it could be you asking this question. Yeah. That's a different story, but that's why you pay people to help you do that.
And that's why they make painkillers.
Yeah. But for everyone who's not putting food on the table, just have a deep check-in with yourself. Why am I rushing back into this thing? Why am I risking injury again? Because injury is awful. Walking around in pain is unpleasant and not a good thing.
And one lesson I've learned as well, I think that one mistake you definitely can make is like, particularly when you get chronic long-term injuries, is you can do the worst of both worlds, which is normally what I would do, which is like you avoid the movements as much as possible because they hurt. And then when you do them really heavy and really intense.
Yeah.
And that's like sounds silly, but it's like common. They're like, oh, you know, I've got this kind of shoulder injury, so I'm like, I'm giving a complete rest and then I'm going to go back to my heavy benching.
Yeah.
And what's normally I've found been more effective later when I've more encouraged people to do is like, hey, you can like keep doing the movements all the time. But it's like sometimes when you've got an injury, it's like crazy light and assisted.
Yeah.
You know, and like maybe you're doing squats with like your hands and you're holding onto something because your knees are really in pain. But actually just going, keeping your confidence, doing what you can is really good and listening to your body. Not just like waiting until I can go crazy heavy like I used to again.
Yeah.
You know, but just your body does like movement and it craves the movement. So not going between that like really intense and full rest. I think that's a danger you can fall into.
Yeah, that's well said. Any more questions?
We have... none more this week.
Happy with that? All right, yeah. Cool.
Sometimes for your questions, if you just have to like really nail the grammar. Because if I have to put the grammar together on this for it to make sense, I just end up skipping it.
Don't rush before you send us a question. I mentioned True Protein, guys. As you know, the supplements, MMP20 is your code for new customers for 20% off when you check out. And then actually, we also mentioned the other week, Tony Bitaji, who was one of the best, most downloaded shows so far this year. He did a great episode with us and he has online courses. He's got a course called Fat Loss Fundamentals. We're going to put our coaching team through it. I'm very excited. What's great about this course is obviously, firstly, it's online, but it's also live and interactive. So it's not just, here's a bunch of videos, here's a bunch of content, go learn it. There's definitely that, which is good because you can self-pace it. But what's also really good is like you can attend live lectures for the group. So you can be in there and you can be like, hey, Tony.
He's teaching the course.
He is teaching him, yeah. So you're going to have, you know, our coaches in there. You'll have some of other coaches in there. So you'll have a great collaboration of all different curious minds when it comes to like weight loss and fat loss and stuff. And if you work with clients, this is just like a mandatory course, right? If you reliably cannot have clients come in and lose weight and hit their goals, you need to be taking this course. And there are so many trainers out there who have so much experience, but you might only be able to put on muscle, right? You might only be able to get a certain amount of weight loss. You might only be able to get weight loss in
certain types of clients.
Exactly, right? And maybe only in bodybuilders, maybe people who only follow it perfectly. There's holes in your game you're missing. And so I would encourage anyone who cannot reliably get weight loss for any client or fat loss for any clients is to take this course. Tony is an expert in this stuff. So if you guys are interested in this, it's tonybutaji.com/offers. So Tony Bitaji, so BOUTAGY.com/offers. Or you can go to, you get 10% off that course as well. Or you can just go to the mymuscleproject.com/Tony and you'll find that course there as well. Okay, so as we wrap up the show today, I want to leave you with a nice review of a book that Raph and I both picked up. I picked up first, read it, and then passed it on to you, Raph, and you've also enjoyed it as well. We haven't really talked about it since then, except for maybe a couple of different pieces. So I'm curious to get your overall rating on it. It's called Ready, Fire, Aim. Yes, Ready, Fire, Aim. And it's by Michael Mansouri or something.
We'll look him up.
It's like two words put together. I can't remember his last name. Michael someone. And He's like a business consultant, a business builder. He's built a few different companies as well, and he spends the rest of his days consulting now.
Michael Masterson.
Masterson. And
book came out in 2007. Bit old.
It is a little bit old. Yeah, you can definitely tell because he's missing some critical stuff about social media in there. But regardless, a lot of the principles remain the same. And I think what's super interesting about this book is he breaks down the business building stages from $0 to $100 million. And I find what's really interesting in this book and why I'd encourage anyone to read it is because the first part of the book is all about, and if you've, I think everyone listening to this at some point has had a really good idea that they would like to turn into a business or a side hustle or something. And he talks a lot about in the start of the book, in the 0 to 1 million phase, just the psychology that is involved around idea creation and what to focus on and how to invest your money and when it's a good idea, when it's a bad idea, if you should or if you shouldn't go into business ownership, if you should or shouldn't go into taking an idea and just turning it into a side hustle. So he's got some really revealing stuff in there, which I found was he just very succinctly just put it in a really, really common sense way to be like, you know, if you're thinking about starting a business or investing some money into a business, this is what you should focus on and don't worry about all this other stuff. And man, I think there was just a lot of really practical, really easy to implement ideas in there, especially for people that have never started a business. And then obviously for businesses that are established and want to grow to the next stage and maybe why they're not growing as well.
Yeah, I think I agree. I think that first section of the book for a lot of people, you get most of the value there.
Yeah.
Even if you skip the rest of the book. Because yeah, everyone's probably thought about it. And I think it just, often if you maybe think about starting a business, like most of the businesses you look at to kind of get inspiration about what you should be doing are like really massive businesses.
Mm.
That's like most businesses you see.
Yeah, yeah.
Most businesses you see are like really big ones that have been around for a while or really successful just because like they're obviously making the biggest impact. But you're at a very different stage.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like just walking through the gym and just like Olympians all around you and you're like, oh, I was thinking of picking up exercise for the very first time and all you can see is Olympians. And then obviously day one, you try and start the Olympian program.
Yeah.
It goes very bad. And this kind of breaks down, I think, that mistake everybody makes. And it's like, hey, here's like the very beginner program in there, or just the maybe the very beginner mindset. It's probably a better way to say it, that you need to adopt in the early days. So, and he kind of makes it a fun read as well.
Mm.
So, if you ever thought about that type of stuff, I think, I'd really recommend it.
Yeah, and I guess like because we're in business ownership and we have a circle of friends that are entrepreneurs as well, you can just see a lot of the common faults that people make. And I guess you kind of always known that if you know the person, but maybe you've never been able to like properly articulate what they're not doing right.
Or even mistakes you've made yourself in the past. You're like, during this time, I can see I was making that mistake.
Yeah, of course. And you can see why a lot of people don't grow to the next stage or why they get stuck. And I think for the fitness industry as well, because it has so many new entrepreneurs and it's so, there's not an established way of doing things. There's so many different ways you can skin the cat in terms of building a business in the fitness industry, especially gyms, is you can see the reason why a lot of gyms don't get successful. And you can see why the vast, vast majority of gyms just end up in this like kind of, he just calls it the stuck zone in stage one and why they can never progress to stage two. So I'd encourage anyone that is, you know, ever been curious about an idea and putting an idea into action, or anyone that is in a business and can't seem to get it to grow, or anyone who's like growing quite well and maybe like isn't sure what is on the horizon and where they should shift their thinking to, this is a great book to pick up. I think it summarizes things really well.
Tell my only detraction from the book was it was very hard to get.
I don't know. I didn't have that issue.
How'd you get it?
I got a paperback off Amazon for $20 and came in like 2 days.
Well, I ended up paying $60 for my book. Fucking idiot. And now I can only find it for $119 on hardback. So I think it's a lot easier to get in the States. But yeah, maybe go Lockie's route. I don't know. My Amazon obviously is terrible.
Yeah. Maybe you just don't know how to select for the paperback option. But anyway, so I'm going to give the book a 4.5 out of 5. I very much enjoyed reading this book.
I'm going to give it a 3.5, mostly because I just didn't find, I guess, the other parts of it as engaging. So I didn't read every part of the book because of that. But some parts were awesome.
Awesome. Yeah. All right, guys, there it is. Thank you so much for tuning in. As always, remember, we'll be on YouTube very soon. Stay tuned for updates. But for now, thank you so much, and we'll speak to you guys next week. Thank you, Project, for tuning in again to another episode of the My Muscle Project. We release an episode every single Monday. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram, the My Muscle Project, to stay up to date with everything we're doing. And if you have some time, leave us a review and a 5-star rating on iTunes.
And don't forget, we have a second show of the week, The After Show. So it's no longer a rest day on Thursdays. If you have any questions for Lachlan and I for that show, head to themindmuscleproject.com/theaftershow. And if you ask a question, we'll answer it on the show.
Thanks again so much, Project, and we'll see you all next week.